This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
We will get to the abducted six-year-old in 1951 who is alive and well.
That's going to be a Lifetime movie.
I've got some candy for you.
We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, a couple of stories that we don't want to make topics out of. I just want to bring to your attention. This one from CNN. Kmart, once one of America's leading discount retailers, is closing its last full-size store in the mainland United States.
We still had one?
Yep. The store is in Bridgehampton, New York. It's on Long Island. Due to close on October 20th, according to an employee who answered the phone at the store earlier this morning but did not want to give her name.
That blue light is going dim.
Manager of the store was not available. The chain still has a small convenience store version of itself in Miami. And, you know, I read a story in the Wall Street Journal several years ago that in Guam, there is still, which of course is an American territory, There is still one full-sized Kmart on that island.
That is true.
And they're just hanging on to it.
And it is a tourist attraction for Japanese tourists, some who will fly to Guam just to see the Kmart.
Do you get the blue light special? Because that kind of went away a while ago.
I'm assuming you do.
Hmm.
Don't know why you would not. And then this story, Aja Wilson and Caitlin Clark had record-breaking seasons, pulling up stats the NBA had never seen before. Aja Wilson became the first player in league history to score more than 1,000 points in a season, averaged 26.9 points per game. Caitlin Clark broke the league's single-season assist mark and scored the most points ever for a rookie.
Incredible.
So Aja Wilson is the league's MVP. Caitlin Clark is Rookie of the Year.
Did they win over the weekend?
Unanimous, by the way, in the voting that she was Rookie of the Year.
Did who win?
The Fever.
I think they lost.
Hmm.
But barely.
Yes, they lost.
Yeah. All right, let me just read a brief portion of this story, and then Dan, if you'll play the clip from ABC News. This is from the New York Post. A California family set... puberty, Scott? Yes, please. A California family's 70-year search for their kidnapped relative ended in June after an online DNA test...
There it is.
...finally put them on the right track to the other end of the country.
Luis Albino was 6 years old in 1951 when he was kidnapped while playing at a park in Oakland. Now over 70 years later, Albino has been found. The Bay Area News Group reports Albino's niece found her uncle living on the East Coast. He's now a father and a grandfather, a retired firefighter and Marine Corps Vietnam veteran. He was lured away in 1951 by a woman promising candy. He was flown to the East Coast with a couple and was raised as if he was their son. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Okay.
What?
Fascinating.
What?
Flown to the East Coast for what purpose?
To be
their
kid.
Kidnapping!
They just kidnapped a kid so they can have a kid? You ever heard of adoption?
Sam, the woman abducted him and took them to the East Coast where she raised him as her son. She, of course, has since died. Who are the other people in her family? I want investigators coming out of the woodwork on this.
They had to have known.
They had to have known. You don't just show up at Thanksgiving dinner with a six-year-old that doesn't belong to you.
Now, they could have lied and said, we adopted him.
Oh, please. This was before milk cartons. So if you, look, I hate to say this, but back in that day, if you were going to do that awful thing, that's the way you did it. You went to another part of the country.
What was the story locally that the lady showed up with an infant after not being pregnant?
Yep.
Oh.
Well, yes.
She's been executed.
Yes.
I forget her
Lisa
name.
Lisa Montgomery.
Lisa Montgomery.
Was executed for cutting the baby out of the womb of Bobby Joe Stinnett.
I'm reading in The Guardian that the woman kidnapped him.
Yep.
And then gave him to a couple.
Oh, that is such a lie. And if she did,
It could have been the couple that raised him.
Right.
Or the couple paid her.
Right.
Do you know what
right.
I'm saying?
I'm not saying she's innocent, but we don't know that the woman who abducted Luis.
Why would you agree to do that if it wasn't for your own yearning to have a child that didn't belong to you?
Money. Go get me a kid. I'll give you $10,000.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's an elaborate ruse.
Has Luis done an interview, Dan? Do we know? Because I want to hear from him. Do you remember being taken away from your family at age 6? Most of us have very formative memories of age 4 and 5 and 6.
The story from the New York Post says he did not want to speak to the media.
Oh, he's got to talk about this.
Hmm. Well, it is the determination of his niece that, because they had articles from 1951 that detailed search parties, tireless efforts to find Luis, including deep dives into San Francisco Bay.
Well, and her 23andMe came back with a 22% match to a random stranger on the East Coast. And then she looked into it and realized, well, wait a minute, this now, is Uncle Luis.
Help me here. Luis's biological mother has died. So she never got to know. Is that true, Scott? The biological mom who lost her son at age 6. Because the niece is quoted here as saying, we didn't start crying until after the investigators left. I grabbed my mom's hand, that would be his aunt, and said, we found him. We grabbed each other and had a really tight, long hug, sat down and just talked. She said, discussing the day of the kidnapping.
His mother died in 2005.
Yeah, so his mother died without ever knowing what became of him. I mean, my God. The lives destroyed over that.
She always kept pictures of him in the home, on display. Family would not say, and I think this was in the ABC story, would not say where on the East Coast Luis lives. They have reopened, well, they still haven't, an open investigation into his abduction.
Yeah, because is anyone still alive that would have known? Maybe they weren't directly involved in the kidnapping, but like where's adoptive dad? And by adoptive I mean kidnapped dad, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, he would either be closing in on 100
or dead,
or he's dead. Yeah,
from the text line, how many other kids did this happen to?
Well, that is a great question, Sam,
especially back then. And somebody preying on the
Think about it, Dan. They took him from Oakland, California.
Wait. Let me add one thing very quickly.
Yeah, please.
He went back to California in July after the family, the niece, found him for 3 weeks. He was able to see, he was playing with his brother Roger when this bandana-clad woman comes up and lures him away.
In Spanish.
He was able to see his brother just before he died.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
He was able to see Roger, who was there the day he was kidnapped.
So he went to California for a three-week visit in July. Roger passed in August.
I just got massive goosebumps.
Yeah, so did I.
Listen to this. That afternoon, Luis and then 10-year-old Roger walked down the block from their home to play in the park. They were approached by a woman in her 30s wearing a green bandana over her hair who began chatting with Luis in Spanish. She promised she would buy him candy if he came along with her, and little Luis agreed to join her. Wary, though, Roger did not. He trailed the pair for a while before returning home to alert an adult to the strange encounter. So Roger grew up as the witness, as a 10-year-old child, knowing you witnessed your brother's kidnapping.
Yeah. Somebody says, and I don't see that in the New York Post story, but somebody claims on the text line that Luis says he remembers being abducted.
You, at age 6, you would absolutely remember that.
Mm-hmm.
That's like first grade.
It's a fascinating story. It's a great read. Again, it's in the New York Post if you want to look it up. His name is Luis, L-U-I-S, Albino, but it's spelled Albino.
He was born in Puerto Rico.
Vietnam War veteran. They mentioned in the story, retired firefighter.
Listen to this. 15 years after Luis went missing, the family renewed their search. He would now be 21, they thought, and his family wondered if military service exams or other adulthood benchmarkers would somehow resurface the long-lost boy. But despite their best efforts, including multiple trips to Puerto Rico, where they wondered if he might have been taken, he was nowhere to be found. So they even knew way back then, Scott, when he was 21, let's look into maybe finding him through the military. But this was before DNA.
Yes.
They wouldn't have known what he looked like.
And do they know the name that he
had? Of course not. You know that they would have changed his name.
His kidnap name?
His name was not Luis Albino. No. Yeah. I mean, of course they would have to change that.
Did they give him... Did the newspaper say what is was his...
New name?
Well, no, I think they're trying to conceal his identity.
Yeah. His fake kidnapped name.
The New York Post does not give his new name. And do you go back to Luis Albino?
No.
She said the name you have. This is in the CBS News story. She said that he had memories of being kidnapped and being taken across the U.S., but the adult in his life never explained what happened to him.
Man, can you imagine how screwed up you would be?
Wouldn't you ask?
Just wondering, like, did I do something wrong as a child? Think about how a child would process this.
Yeah.
I've now been taken away from mom and dad. Do they know it? Do they wonder where I am? Or did I do something to cause this? That's therapy every day for the rest of your life.
Well, or unless they said to him that he had been adopted, that his parents had put him up for adoption.
Or back then, what would they say? They would say your parents were in a car wreck. That's what they would have said.
And we sent a family friend to pick you up.
This is why you have to have a code word, people.
913-586-PINEAPPLE. 7798. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. We're talking about this six-year-old boy who was abducted in Oakland, California, Luis Albino. He was 6 years old, as I mentioned. He was lured away by a woman. Is that New Mellencamp or something?
Pretty good.
Well, that does sound good.
Roger Klein and the Peacemakers.
Oh, like it just as much. Anyway, lured away by a woman who was wearing a bandana and spoke to him in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And family never knew whatever became of Luis Albino. There were searches of the San Francisco Bay. They tried it when he would have been 21 to see if he was somehow in the military under the name Luis Albino, whatever. No luck there. Because he was taken to the East Coast and raised by another family. Whether it was the woman who abducted him or she did it for pay for another family or whatever, we don't know. Not yet. And Luis Albino was found after his niece, biological niece, took one of those 23andMe tests and found out that there was a 22% match with a complete stranger on the East Coast. She investigated. It was Luis Albino. And thank God, they found him in June. He flew out to meet his family in July and was able to see his brother, with whom he was playing with the day he was abducted, a month before his brother died.
He embraced the niece who found him and apparently just said, thank you for finding me. You would wonder your entire rest of your days, mm-hmm. now that you've found your biological family from whom you were stolen, like, what would my life have been like? We don't know what his life was like.
Do you think he remembered his name?
Yes. At age six, you know your name. If you had said he was taken at age two, no. Well,
and then from the text line, if he had any concerns about this or any thought that something fishy was going on, why, when he turned 18, 19, 20, granted this was years ago, did he not do something about it?
Because they brainwashed him. I guarantee you they brainwashed him.
913-586-7798. Ken in Raymore. Hello, Ken.
Good afternoon, folks. Dana and Scott, love you guys. And Sam does a wonderful job. And I'll get right to the point here. I was about 8 years old. My brother was six. And when my mom and dad got divorced on the farm, so we had to move to town. And we never knew the reason why. But soon after we moved to town, mom had to stay or left and went somewhere. My brother and I had to stay at my grandma's, which we were staying there anyway. And so she was gone for a couple weeks. And so life just continued on. Here we go. That was 1961, 62. And now you get back here. I'm 72 now. And about 2 or 3 years ago, my daughter called me from Portland and said, Dad, you have a half brother that lives in Minnesota. And I said, how is that possible? And sure enough, his name is James. He lives up north of Duluth. And I met him already, and he was in the Air Force 6 years after I was in the Air Force. Well, he was an officer because he went to college. And
so, wait, Ken, back up. When you say your mom was gone for 2 weeks, did she leave to go birth the child that you never knew about?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, sure.
And so I had no idea, and that was a puzzle for all these years, you know, and because Grandma and Grandpa never knew or never told us. They knew, but they never, ever told us.
I was going to say, Ken, back then people did not talk about these types of things. And so when Sam asked why did the young man not push it, back then these types, and certainly not the kidnapping, but the way you came into the world, even with some adoptions, families did not talk about those things. Certainly the oops pregnancy, where
you go off,
the 17-year-old daughter goes off to, you know, study abroad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, comes back 3 months later. Nobody talked about that stuff.
But you were saying the term brainwashed earlier, and I certainly could see that. And for every question he would have as a young person, it's not hard to tell him a lie and get him to believe it. Right?
Yeah, and then by age 8 or 9, it's part of your fabric, and you stop asking.
Yeah, why am I living here when I had my mom and dad in Oakland? Well, they put you up for adoption, son.
Yeah. Where's my brother?
Well, they put him up, and he's with another family.
Yeah, I mean,
somewhere.
My God, it's awful.
And then, you know, how do you untangle that web of lies that you've been told for so long? You don't know where you don't really know where you're from. I mean, when I was 6 years old, I think we were living at Fort Hood the first time. I couldn't drive to Fort Hood right now and point out the house that I lived in for 3 years, from 6 to 9 years of, or 5 to 8 years of age. I have no idea where it is.
It was just where you lived.
I know the neighborhood. I know the name of the neighborhood. But if you put me on the ground at Fort Hood, I couldn't find it. That was just my house.
The premeditation involved to leave the East Coast, go to Oakland, California, take a child as far as you can back across the country before milk cartons, before the National Center for Exploited and Missing Children.
Before you needed ID to get on a plane.
All of it.
All you did was buy a paper ticket and hand it to the lady at the front.
Someone should be held responsible for this, should they not?
They're probably dead. I mean, he's well into his 70s. Anybody involved or who would be expected to have knowledge that something here doesn't pass the smell test.
I hope the FBI doesn't let this go. I know they're saying that, but I know that there's probably more pressing things today going on in the world, but somebody should be held accountable if there's anyone left who could be.
Dorothy in KCK. Hello, Dorothy.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
We're well, thank you.
Good. So I was adopted from Memphis, Tennessee in 1950. And at that time, there was a huge scandal going on by a woman named Georgia Tan, who literally bought babies, stole babies, whatever, from people, women that were in prison giving birth, people that were coming through because they needed work, and she'd say, I'll take your baby. My point being is that it was very easy back then to hide what people were doing. I think that they didn't ask a lot of questions, and she made millions of dollars before she was finally caught. And the only reason I was involved was because this was going on when I was born, and I was born at a hospital but put in an orphanage, the state would not approve of my adoption for 60 days because they wanted to make sure I had not been stolen.
Stolen, wow.
Before my parents could bring me home to St. Louis. And there's a Lifetime movie called Stolen Babies all about this. But yeah, she took babies from all over the place. And I'm sure many from just off the street. And it was a very big deal.
Dorothy, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm reading about Georgia Tan as we speak.
My
and you're
God.
Right. She operated out of Tennessee in the 30s and 40s primarily. She died in 1950. But do you know what Georgia Tan's real first name was?
What?
Beulah.
Of course it was.
Yeah. Yes. I remember that now. Yeah.
Oh,
and,
God.
Yeah. It was just an unbelievable thing, the number of children. And she sold babies to There are many actors and actresses from back in the day that got babies from her. It was an international scandal.
Oh, God.
I think that back then it wasn't, you know, I think you probably could just show up with a child and people didn't say a lot about it.
All right. Hey, thank you for the call, and I'll read up on her during the bottom of the hour
20
break.
20 years and 5,000 children.
She was not dumb. Her alma mater is Columbia.
Okay. What became of Beulah, the kidnapper?
Well, I'm going to read extraordinaire. I'm going to read about her life story here during the bottom of the hour break, but she died at the age of 59.
In 1950.
I hope in prison.
Estimated to have stolen more than 5,000 children. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
That's right, Sam.
God.
And none of the children were restored. She died of uterine cancer 3 days before the state was going to file charges against the adoption society that she ran.
Oh.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Story here, headlined Family Feud. By the way, I just read up about Beulah Georgia Tan. Horrible, horrible woman. It is suggested in the article that the child in that infamous movie, Mommy Dearest,
Joan Crawford,
was fictionally adopted from the child center that Tan ran in Tennessee. Now, Sam, will you look up? Somebody was suggesting that Joan Crawford adopted her children from Tan. I find that incredibly hard to believe.
Oh, I wouldn't find that hard to believe at all.
But she did.
I don't know that to be true, but I don't find it hard to believe.
One thing, though, that Georgia Tan would do, and it said this in the story I was just reading, she would, especially the poorer children that she had in her care, if you will, and I use care in air quotes, she would adopt the poorest children out to the richest family she could find, and almost exclusively dealt with families that were in Hollywood or big business, et cetera, and would put those poorer kids with those richer families.
This from a 1995 article from the Memphis Commercial Appeal. Notable personalities who used Tan services included actress Joan Crawford.
No way.
Yep.
So they would basically say, I mean, what are you looking for? Would you like a little blonde-haired, blue-eyed three-year-old? I mean, mm-hmm. I'll just go pick them out like I'm picking out clothing in a store.
Yes. And Sam mentioned earlier, she either bought or stole 5,000 babies. And this was at a time, keep in mind, this was in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, this article reads, that said, you know, adoption was not very common. In fact, during one of those decades,
yeah.
there was a year where the adoption agency, the main adoption agency in Boston, only adopted out 5 children in the entire year.
According to records from her adoption agency, air quotes around the word adoption, the records indicate that between 1940 and 1950, they placed 3,000 children.
Oh, my God.
And at the time, an adoption in the state of Tennessee would cost $7. Tan was paid $5,000 per child.
And no one thought to look into this back at the time?
They did in 1950. Her business, if you will, came to the attention of authorities in Tennessee. They insisted on an investigation. One was launched. She was on the verge of being charged.
And she died.
She died 3 days before they could file the charges.
She was also receiving $61,000 a year from the state of Tennessee.
She died with more than $1 million in 1950. And keep in mind what $1 million would have been worth 74 years ago.
God. I think sometimes there are just crimes that are so unconscionable. And I would put Robert Courtney in this category.
Sure.
It's not even motivational blindness that no one is investigating. It just is so almost unbelievable that something like that could happen.
Some of the children she got from the families through threats of legal action.
19 of the kids of the 5,000 died because of abuse at her facility.
God.
And there is a sign. They don't know who these kids are, how old they were necessarily at death. They were all cremated in a large pit. And a plaque has been erected there. I'm not going to read it to you. It's lengthy. But it says here, from the 1920s to 1950s, young children were kidnapped and then sold to wealthy families.
She was known to go to the hospital and find unwed mothers and threaten to take the baby under legal action if they did not give them up willingly because she argued they could not afford to care for the baby.
Even describes her as an American social worker and a child trafficker. Ran an unlicensed adoption agency in Memphis, Tennessee.
That's an odd combination of titles.
Okay, I just got a probable cause statement according to crime. And speaking of crime, that we are going to have to break down right now because this is crazy, Sam. Crazy. It's got to be Jackson County. A Kansas City woman has been charged after being arrested for a string of thefts involving candles. Now, follow me here. Candles.
Well, some of them can be about $20.
A probable cause statement shows Destiny Moore was arrested September 21st for allegedly stealing 30 candles from a store on Broadway Boulevard. Police now believe she's been involved in at least 25 documented incidents, either alone or with accomplices, always stealing candles.
A store on Broadway, those could be $50.
Okay,
candles.
So that's, is that like a Pickwick? What is that?
Because one would be like a specialty, okay. One of the specialty small stores.
So I've got the probable cause. It says on September 21st, employees at 4705 Broadway Boulevard observed this Destiny Moore shoplifting, and they had previously been observed doing the same thing. Okay?
What was the address?
47th and Broadway.
So it's on the plaza.
Essentially. Okay. So in this case, officers recovered a combined 30 candles for a total of $694, which you might be thinking is a lot of money for candles. Oh, wait.
There's more.
This goes back to April. There is one involving Destiny Moore where she is alleged to have stolen 47 candles for $1,266. There's four of them in May where she is accused of stealing candles for $539, followed by $545, followed by $808, followed by $1,347.
How's she getting
them
all out the door?
How big are her arms?
Is she going in with a shopping cart?
Then in June, she comes down a bit. She thinks she's getting greedy here, Scott. Mm. So June 6th, she is observed alone. Now they're on to her and they're following her, stealing 23 candles for $561. Then look at how she ramps it up in June and July. I won't even read all of those.
2021.
It just goes on and on and on through July, August, and then all the way through all of September.
Rent don't pay itself.
It looks like, the sum of all the aforementioned thefts, would you like to guess? Just guess.
$31,000.
$25,981.10. Sam.
That's a lot of wax.
Help us out here. If you're a ne'er-do-well, I understand, you know, here and there, they go into CVS and they steal liquor, or they steal razors, like whatever. I don't know that we've ever had a case where one person is accused of only stealing one product in perpetuity until she reaches, allegedly, almost $26,000.
She's very particular.
I mean, if I had to guess, and this is just a guess, I'm not making any accusations here, this wasn't the only item that she was stealing. It's just the one that she got caught.
Boom.
I mean...
And by the way, there are a couple of furniture stores right there on that intersection of 47th and Broadway, and they are not cheap furniture stores. And typically inside a furniture store, you can find candles.
Give me just one, like the $500 one where she... $500 and there was like 23 of them or something?
Let me look. Let's do the $1,078. $1,078 on September 6th.
For how many candles?
40.
40 candles.
Oh.
These are roughly... $27 a piece.
Okay.
On average.
That's pretty run-of-the-mill. That is not expensive.
Listen to this. After being convicted of felony stealing and sentenced to 2 years probation on September 12th, just 2 weeks ago,
She
was convicted of felony stealing and given 2 years probation. She was observed that day stealing 25 candles at a value of $673.
Some people don't learn, Dana.
She's got to go away. I'm sorry.
I think violating her parole is going to guarantee that.
$25,000 over, let me see, let me count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, name? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Destiny Summer.
It's other. Three full pages of individual thefts. Does that make sense?
Yes. She was a thiever.
Well, and from the text line, allegedly, she could be a kleptomaniac. It could
you
be
think?
A situation where yeah, she doesn't even need to steal the
Stop
candles.
Stop it. If you are a kleptomaniac, you it's not one product targeted kleptomaniaism.
It's the thrill of the kill. Maybe she loves candles.
No, I think kleptomaniacs take a pair of underwear here, and they take some hamburger there, and they take, you know, a pair of earrings here.
And
you don't just keep stealing candles. What, does she have a warehouse somewhere?
Her name is Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Remember when she stole a pair of jeans and did not need to?
Misunderstood. I think it was underwear.
Was it underpants?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. 913-586-7798, 913-586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. Sticky fingers, allegedly, get you a lot of candles. It always, and like disgustingly fascinates me, the things that these... smash and grabbers choose to steal. Like, this woman allegedly had only an appetite that we know of for candles here in Kansas City.
We had the group of women a couple of weeks back who allegedly had a love for Yeti coolers, and they were so allegedly desirable that they punched one of the guys in the face on the way out.
Joe in Lenexa. Joe, hello.
Hey, you did your commercial break with such an appropriate song. I can't believe it. That was hilarious. Candles in the wind.
That was all Sam.
When I was, it was good. And I enjoy your program, Dave. I listen to you every day on the way home from work.
Thank you for that.
But you're welcome. Hearing about the candles, my wife worked at a little store in Lee Summit there at Summit Fair Shopping Center that specialized in that type of merchandise. And she had a small part-time job as a door greeter for about 3 months. And the same ladies would come in. You come in the store, you grab a shopping bag for your purchases, and these ladies would dump everything into the bag they could get and just run out the door. I mean, my wife had their license number, and the store owners would say, no, we have to call corporate. We can't do that. And after about 3 months of this, she said, I don't want to work there anymore, which is fine. But the ironic thing... shortly after that, I'm driving down South Kansas City, about 85th and Blue Ridge. There's a SUV at this housing project, and the back of that hatchback is opened up. The store brand bags that you get when you buy your merchandise are hanging from the top, and her whole back end is filled in with the products from this store. And on the side of her vehicle, she's even got a website advertising the products. Huh. It's so brazen. There's just no prosecution. I'm glad to hear this other company did prosecute.
Yeah.
You go up to Platte County and tell me there's no prosecution. Betty in Kansas City. Betty, hello.
Hi. I wanted to shed some light on that candle situation. We have security guards in all the, can I say the name of the store?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bath and Body Stores. And the candles are $35 down. And there is a website. They seal them, and there is a website that you can go to. But you have to have a code to buy the candles. And the caller before me is correct. There is a truck parked in a certain area, and it's got the name of the store, the candles, and you have to buy them, but you have to know. They have to know who you are. It's a regular racket. We can't do anything. They walk in, fill up the baskets, and walk out with candles.
Well, but you said you have security. What's the point in having a security guard if they can't do security?
That's what they want to know, because security guards, they're there only as a deterrent. But it doesn't deter anything. They steal, and we just look at them.
Do you at least write down their license? Do you at least write down their license plates?
It doesn't do any good. By the time, it has to be over a certain amount for the police to come. And when they come, the people are gone. The managers know the thieves. They know them. They'll say, okay, here they come. Here they come. I've been right there and witnessed it myself.
Can't you just lock the door before they get to it?
Well, only one time, and we got sued because we're not allowed to touch them. We're not allowed to touch them. We can't even say, come back, you didn't pay for that. We're there only as a deterrent. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But in Chicago, they have started something new. If anything is over $40 that you've stolen, it's a felony.
Oh, $40.
A little bit better. $40. Anything over $40. Here, it has to be over, I think it's $750, either $500 or $750. It's awful, and it's getting worse. Hmm. Yeah, we've had our company for years, and security guards quit because they are handicapped. They can't do anything.
Well, they're handcuffed, literally and figuratively.
We were thinking that since they're stealing so much, you know, it's better to get police. They're paying the same amount of money for what's being lost.
And could not a police officer then, even if they're acting off duty,
sure,
but as security, they have law enforcement. Capabilities, even when they're off duty, can they not say, stop, you're stealing?
They can.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, Scott, when you go to that website, is the code word stolen?
But you would think.
What does this candle smell like? Theft and bad choices?
But couldn't an undercover operation get into that website with a code word, set up an arrangement?
I'm getting just a tad of felony orange.
That smells like steel toilet.
That smells like toilet ooch.
Nice. News with Dan Weinbaum.
Nerds.
Coming your way in 2 minutes. That guy over there is Sam Stevie III. She's Dana Wright. My name's Scott on KMBZ.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.